I wish I could, I'd give you all a copy of David Anderson's book, Breakfast Epiphanies. So all these collection of sweet surprises in it. I enjoy his writing. His theology is perhaps a bit more conservative than mine, and perhaps than some of yours, though he might argue that for all I know. Maybe he just uses what we might consider more conservative terminology. His essays are sprinkled with lots of angels and lots of God. And he is a Trinitarian, after all, an Episcopalian. Still, I appreciate his encouragement to find wonder in the everyday, even as he admits often his crabbiness or his disillusionment. An early part of the essay from the reading from this morning that I didn't include begins with, "Like you, I do not believe in Christmas." Christmas in America, he says, is just like a trip to Disney World. I appreciate his candor this time of year, and yet his encouragement to find meaning in this curious annual observation, despite whatever weight the world may be imposing on us and our hearts. Maybe Christmas has never been your holiday, or maybe it has, but perhaps the luster has faded a bit, if only for a time. So then we wonder, how is it we find our way to joy again when the world has offered us something less than joyful, perhaps? Ironically, there's a great Buddhist story from the Theravada tradition about a woman whose son has died. And she goes to the master, she goes to the Buddha, to beg him to bring her child back to life. And he says he will, if she can bring him mustard seeds from the homes of those who have not suffered loss. And she goes door to door in her community trying to find the seeds, but of course, there's no one who has not suffered loss. And that is her consolation, ultimately, that she is not alone. There is comfort in that. But then, and those of us who have lost a bit of Christmas spirit can be assured there are others like us, but then we wonder if that's really what the Christmas story is about, or is it? So I wandered on Facebook a few days ago. A colleague had posted an article about Christmas truths. Thought that was an intriguing title. She suggested we not read it until after the holidays because it would really ruin them for us. But how can you throw out a challenge like that and not respond? So, of course, I read it. And it's really long, and it's very academic. I think maybe that's why she said wait until after Christmas. Maybe you wouldn't have the time to read it, for one thing. And it has all these challenges to the facts of the Christmas story, a good part of which have to do with an argument about where Jesus was actually born. So in the article, they maintain that it was not a stable. Due to a fairly significant amount of cultural misinterpretation, we have missed the point, apparently, that it's likely that Jesus was born in a Palestinian peasant's home, surrounded by people who may actually have been Joseph's extended family members. For centuries, the article says, Palestinian peasants have been born on the raised terraces of the one-room family homes. The birth of Jesus was no different. His incarnation was authentic. His birth most likely took place in the natural place for a peasant to be born, in a peasant home. That didn't really seem like ruining it for me, but anyway. So much for the stable, of course, we think, because we're used to the story about the stable and about the family being alone and somehow being rejected from the inn. The animal part apparently may have some credibility. Apparently, first century homes often housed animals along with their families. But I kept wondering to myself what difference it makes. The details of the story are not really the point, are they? So then we wonder, well, what is the point? This story is so multi-layered, this Christmas story, and it has entry points in many different places. So I think maybe for some of us, the point of entry may be the starting over, the trying to see things anew. Having given ourselves the Advent season to think about it, to work with the loss or losses that we may be experiencing or have experienced, that maybe on Christmas morning, the point is to imagine our capacity to turn a new page, to start with a new sense of wonder. And the fact that we're trying is really important, and perhaps the most important part, because the struggle is universal. The meaning of this annual story that we tell ourselves, or that we get reminded of in strange and curious ways, like people reaching out for help, whose names just happen to be Joseph and Mary. Maybe the meaning is about the need to be connected to something bigger than ourselves, because we know, like the Buddhist story, that by ourselves, it's too hard. After all our waiting, we may discover that Christmas is not the fait accompli so much as the beginning of a story. It's the chapter that says, let's start here again. Let's recognize how cold and hard the world can be, how unwelcoming. And then let's see it if it shifts a bit for us. Maybe not 100%, and maybe not irrevocably, but possibly. My friend David Anderson says, we are hungry for the spirit, desperate to enter the spiritual realm, and know, please, that there's something more than this visible world. Surely between our need and the reality that we are not alone in our yearning, there is hope available to us in this sweet story, or else it would not get revisited so regularly. It will get dark today, and the night will feel long because the earth has only just shifted in its turning. But it has shifted, and the light is coming back. And when we wake in the morning, it will be a day that beckons us to start anew. Light a candle. Think of someone you love and offer them welcome from the bottom of your heart, whether they are right beside you or somewhere you can't quite reach. And see if something new, some smart spark, if only small, might light in your being. It is a new beginning, and at the very least, an invitation.